Listening to lungs, we hear the body's plasticity and invisible expanse. We hear its fragile existence and its relational being in the world, and come to appreciate its interdependency with every other thing. The visual body belies this fragility and codependence. Instead, it pretends a certain form and anatomy, autonomous and independent, contained, sealed, certain, and recognizable as itself. The lungs heard through the stethoscope breach this seal and certain form. The breath, as quiet rhythm, as wheeze or crackle, disrupts the visual body, and we come to hear its diffuse and permeable shape. We come to hear its relationality as a leaky, codependent self, alive not because of boundaries and a physical limit, but because of its porousness and inexhaustible expanse, extending from the world and into the world, breathing in and out, in and out.
Actually, I'll tell you where it would be good. Probably there.
There we go.
Is that right?
That's good. Perfect.
My title is Doctor. My name is Debbie Thackray. Before we even get on to actually using the stethoscope, we have to teach the bit beforehand. So you would run a session of actually getting the students to observe how their partner is breathing, identify whether they're breathing apically, which I mean from the top of the chest, or whether they're using the diaphragm, and whether you actually see your tummy rise and fall. Just that first differentiation. And then to think about the muscles involved, when the main muscle is the diaphragm, but you have got other muscles that could be being used. Look at the pattern, look at the rate, and we also teach what we call the surface markings of the lungs. So the best way of describing this is if you actually could see inside somebody else's body, you can actually see exactly where the lungs are. So you can anatomically picture the lungs. And so I spend a long time teaching the students the surface markings of the lungs, so that when they have someone in front of them, they're looking and they're thinking, that's where the upper lobe of the lung is, that's the middle lobe of the lung, that's the lower lobe of the lung, anteriorly. And then posteriorly, this is where the upper part is, this is where the posterior part is. So they're creating a picture, a mental picture of where the lungs are before you then teach them, okay, now you know where the lungs are. You now need to take your stethoscope, and what you do is you're listening to we'll start on the left-hand side, the left upper lobe. You're going to listen. So you have to teach them how to instruct the patient to breathe whilst they're using the stethoscope. And then it's a very set pattern of you compare the left to the right. And we do that anteriorly, and we do it posteriorly. And then they have to listen to a whole breath cycle. So the patient's got to breathe in and the patient's got to breathe out.
What happens to knowledge in the triangulation of bodies, breath and technology? How does the ear operate in its search for signal? And as Harris and Van Drie have asked, how do we share sensory skills? How can a practice of listening become pedagogical, useful, and in the world?
We all take breathing so much for granted that actually getting them to fine-tune and actually look at how the person opposite them is breathing when there's nothing wrong with them, they don't really get why you're doing it. Whereas if you put a real patient there who's sitting there with visible signs of breathing difficulty, they've got increased work of breathing, you see accessory muscles around the neck and around the jaw active, you see them really struggling to actually put a sentence together, that makes more sense. But we can't have patients for that. So simulation it is a really good way to actually recreate a patient, or certainly the physical signs of a patient who might have respiratory distress.
Morning, Mr. Day. My name's Chris. I'm one of the respiratory physios. I've got a few with Mikey with here me today. How do you like to be called, Mr. Day or Alan?
Alan?
Lovely. Al. Lovely stuff, Al. Alan, what we're going to do before we get going is just going to explain what's going to happen. We're just going to carry out a quick assessment because I understand you've been having some problems with your chest after your operation. So what we're going to do is we're just going to quickly have a look at your chest, probably jot down a few things on the monitor, and then after that probably have a listen, just have a look at your legs and things like that as well, and then we'll go from there. Is that all right?
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's more than happy.
Yeah, so I'll probably now just walk around and just jot down his pulse and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you think he's
on 15 metres by her face.
She's still struggling. Doing it his rest rate hasn't changed.
And then 80.
Blood pressure's fine, pulse is fine. Assume his temperature's high.
Yeah.
Breathing in and out, in and out, in and out. We are expanding as rhythm and into an undulating exchange. I am not a form but a pattern that is not my body nor the oxygen in the air, but the cadence of how we meet and how I am alive because of this exchange. Listening to lungs gives me a different knowledge that is not a knowledge of the body, but a knowledge from the body by its sound. This is the body of absorptive patterns, which provides not only the opportunity for a specific diagnostic insight and sense, but it also generates a more general understanding of our own and everybody as codependent rhythm and as permeable, open form.
So the computerized mannequins, they're great with what they do. So they can display lots of different physiological variables. So you could set the respiratory rate at 30, whereas your normal respiratory rate is 12 to 16. So you can actually show this mannequin breathing really, really rapidly. You can show changes in the heart rate that you would get if somebody was breathing that fast. You could change how the blood pressure will change if somebody's breathing that fast. And you can also show things, so their saturation levels, the amount of oxygen in the blood. So it gives that reality rather than trying. Yes, you have to learn the basics on each other of how do you breathe, what muscles are involved, and learn to assess whether you're breathing apically or whether you're breathing with your diaphragm, and you can do that on normals, but then it's about how do you apply that knowledge and use it when you're assessing a patient. So that's what simulation offers us. The downside of using a computerized mannequin is that you don't get the communication aspect.
I find it really hard to sort of interact as if they're a patient.
Yeah.
Just because you don't have that verbal feedback from them.
But then also, we're used to practicing on well bodies. So a sim man is amazing because you can practice on someone that's actually unwell, but then the other side of it is they're made to be presenting in this way. So you need to find out.
They're not actually unwell.
Yeah, they're not actually unwell. They're made to present in this way.
Yeah.
So you need to find out the way they're meant to be presenting, instead of a real person, which is like all over the place.
It's the gap between having someone who's well and pretending to be ill, and where I personally feel there's a lot more to change on the sim man for it to be effective, because it doesn't always breathe. You have to still ask questions as to whether or not they're able to cough and respond to you, and what their responses are to your questions. So it's useful when they work for getting things like your respiratory rate and your heart rate and listening to the chest. But I think this, when it comes to this scenario, you still need someone answering your questions, because it's important for you.
I'd rather use one of the practice stethoscopes on a real human being than listen to it with our stethoscopes to what they have in there.
Mm-hmm. Just have an obs machine.
Have an actual body with a stethoscope that plays the sound you're meant to hear, and then you have to work out what it is, as opposed to finding the built-in speakers in the body.
What is verifiable in the overlaps of simulated and real flesh? Who is heard and who are not?
The abnormalities start to occur when you've got a change in the airways or a change in the lung tissue, or you've got something in the airways or in the alveoli. It will then just change the quality of the sound. So at first it will be just recognise what a normal breath sound is. Okay, what are the subtleties of that normal breath sound? Okay, then what could make an abnormal breath sound? Can you pick, okay, you can recognise that's a crackle or that's a wheeze. Okay, now another level of to that is actually, where in that inspiration or expiration is that sound happening? Is it happening in inspiration or is it happening in expiration? Because that's got a different meaning as well.
The sound of the lungs helps us to picture the body in its invisible form, to see and appreciate how it expands beyond the skin and how we exist as energy and interactivity rather than as visual form. The diagnosis is guided back to visual lungs, to tissue, to anatomy, to stats and to health, to make the body better. But something stays in the air.
You fine-tune your sensory skills of your hands, and I try to say to the students that listening is like that.
A sensibility remains for the invisible and the formless, where we meet beyond our bodies, in circulation, sharing the same air. Here we are not contained but contagious, dangerously entangled in each other, opening a different view on how we are human and how we could live together and with every other thing.
Alan, can you breathe through your tummy for me? He dropped off again. He's only got a rough rate of 10 anyway. It's less apical.